Every lap in under a minute means every second matters. Bosch Power Tools Perth Super Sprint, May 17 to 19. Book now at Ticketek. Supercars, unforgettable.
A Motorsport Podcast Network production.
Hey Sleuthers, it is the V8 Sleuth Podcast powered by Repco. It is race week for the Repco Bathurst 1000. And on this episode, we thought we'd take a look back 30 years to the 1992 TUI's 1000. The last running of the Group A era, it was the 30th running, the 30th year of the race. And of course, well, yeah, some Kiwi bloke dropped the line that has lived in infamy ever since on the podium. Will Dale's alongside me as we have a look at the 1992 race. But before we get into that, let's just soak up some of the commentary, some of the love from the 92 Great Race.
Hello and welcome to Bathurst for one of the great days in Australian sport. It's the day of the Great Race, the TUI's 1000. The once-a-year motor race, which attracts the attention of every sports fan.
Engines come up to revs, so they get off the line, and it's Johnson up on the inside of Perkins with Mark Scaife looking for it, but he'll drop back one spot. 0-5 is stalled on the starting grid, Peter Brock.
On outright speed, Dick Johnson Sierra is the only car that can take the battle up to the distance at this stage. See if Johnson wants to try and break the back. Well, Mark Scaife ducks down the inside, and he will lead the Great Race as they come across the line for the third time.
The word we've had is that there will be heavy rain at the circuit in 1 hour or less, and there's some action in the pits. The boys are getting out the wet weather tyres.
This is roughly when Nissan were going to change anyway. It just couldn't have happened better for them. They've managed to stay out on the slicks. Now they'll go to the wets. That'll make them even more dominant, and they'll be off 20, 30 seconds to get the driver in, change the tyres, on schedule anyway. They don't even know it's raining.
Jimmy Richards, car number one, the Winfield Nissan.
The Rainmaster aboard the car, renowned as a Rainmaster.
Just look at him take off the four-wheel drive, this Nissan GTR.
Bye-bye.
Dickie Johnson, he is hanging on like you couldn't believe today.
Dick, what's it feel like when you're running in these appalling conditions and the turbo cuts in?
I can tell you, Doug, it's like chewing the leg on a chocolate frog. It's about that much fun.
Anything that Dick Johnson had going for him, making inroads on Jimmy Richards, has now disappeared. With the arrival of the rain, they're all out there on slicks. There's going to be a mad charge through the pits here.
Oh no. Jimmy Richards has hit the wall.
Well, Richo, of course, stuck on slicks and no traction at all, even for a four-wheel drive Nissan.
Listen to the crowd. I don't want to be unkind to Winfield and the Nissan team, but the punters at the top of the hill, this is the kind of send-off they wanted to see for the Nissans.
If they don't stop the race, there won't be any cars left to complete it anyway.
Red flag is out. The race is over.
Ivan, the $64 question, who is the winner?
I would say car one. The race has got to be declared at the last full lap before the red flag went out, and he was still leading at that stage.
Well, Ivan Stibbard has just awarded the race to the number one car. You must be pleased with that, even after the crash.
Fantastic. I can't believe it.
Well done, Jimmy Richards.
And now, the winners of the great race for the second year running, Mark Scaife and Jim Richards.
There you go, Will. That's a scene setter. That gets us into the mood. That's the vibe of the 92 TUI's 1000 as it was then. What springs to mind for you when you first look at the 92 race or you first think about it?
Well, as I said on our Bathurst 1000 preview episode last week, this is the first one that I can remember, like fully, like most of the elements of from when I was growing up, watching it on TV at home. All the drama that occurred throughout the day and the lead up to the race for that matter, and of course the very dramatic conclusion, and in particular it making the news headlines on Channel 7 News afterwards and them beeping the infamous very specific word out of what Jim Richards said on the podium.
Were you the young kid in Queensland that said to your mum and dad, what's a pack of assholes?
No. No awkward questions were asked in the Dale household.
It's the two things of the 92 race. It's the Jim podium speech and it's the sad passing of Denny Holm, the 67 Formula One world champ who had a heart attack at the wheel. And, of course, that's part of the Jim story later on because he knew Denny quite well. He was told about it during the race. And then, of course, what happened at the podium happened on the podium. So they're kind of the two bannerhead elements that stand out for me from that day. There's so many storylines and other elements at play there, but they're the two big ones.
Well, you think back to one of the defining elements of that race being the dominance of the GTR in the wet conditions, and There was a time there in the lead up to the race where there was no guarantee that the two factory GTRs were going to turn up.
Yeah, that's right. So there's the big brouhaha was over the restrictions placed on them and the weight, most importantly, that was placed there. I mean, it made it to court. Like it was full on stuff and threats of not running. The Nissan factory team not coming to Bathurst for the race, which I can't imagine was, I mean, big threats. But with all of the money invested and all of the commitments to sponsors, of course, Winfield, the cigarette brand, was their new partner that year, Yokohama.
The one big touring car race throughout the year that has a profile as well, it's worth noting.
Yeah.
When most of the touring car rounds are compressed to 1 hour highlights on television, it would have been unlikely that those cars would have not appeared.
And the Siggy brands were all built around television events.
Mm.
That's what, you know, that's why Tony Longhurst did the AMS car series all the time in the B&H cars, TV.
Yeah.
It's why Winfield, when they were on the GDRs, did the AMS car series. Mm. It was more TV hours, and that's what they were pretty much running by as their measure of, you know, reflection of success, of achievement, of exposure was getting on the telly. And Bathurst is the biggest broadcast of the year. So started under a cloud, but they made it there. And in the end, though, it was literal clouds that really – I mean, they hadn't – apart from 87, there hadn't been many wet Bathursts in the recent past prior to 92. And the lead up to that race was weird in a way. You had the Nissan drama blowing up. You had this kind of hybrid class stuff because you had the new 93 spec cars that were running in their own class, actually. A lot of people forget that.
Mm.
The return of Falcon, Glenn Seaton had his PJ car ready. Dick Johnson didn't have his Falcon.
He had a Falcon.
Well, he had
ready.
A Falcon.
He just wasn't allowed to use it.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Two HRT Commodores and a Commodore for Peter Brock in what was the Advantage Racing mobile team. So then you had the Turbo Group A cars. You had the Group A Commodores and small capacity cars. A bit of the future coming as well. It's the most varied makes and models and categories, sort of flavor of formula. It's probably the last time that really happened to that degree.
Well, you had different versions of, as you said, different versions of Holden Commodore. You had different versions of BMW M3 on the grid as well because you had the full DTM spec B&H cars of Tony Longhurst and Johnny Cicotta.
And that was a brand new car, especially for Bathurst. The 25 car was a newie.
Wasn't brand new by the start of the race, unfortunately.
Yeah. Warm-up got a little ding.
Yeah.
And Johnny Cicotta, the Venezuelan who was the superstar in motorcycle racing, drove Formula One for a while too. He finished runner-up in 85, and I don't think he'd been at Bathurst.
87.
87 was the last time in the CBM car. So it'd been a while since he'd been a part of that mix. And the other thing in the lead-up, we talk so much and we love it and we want it back, the Sandown 500.
Yes.
But not everyone did the Sandown 500 in those days.
No.
So the Shell team did it for the first time in 2 years.
Mm.
The Nissan team hadn't been at it since 1989.
Yeah.
Brock ran one car, not two, ran the older VN because the VP wasn't quite ready. You had a lot of occasions where international drivers were coming for Bathurst, but they didn't have availability for Sandown. So whoever was kind of the lead guy in the second car got the go with the main guy. Mm. So Troy Dunstan drove with Peter Brock.
Troy Dunstan playing the part of Manuel Reuter for the Sandown 500.
It makes me think, is Manuel Reuter the most forgotten Peter Brock Bathurst co-driver of all time?
I've got to wonder if Manuel remembers it. Surely he does.
I'm sure he does. Bathurst. How could you forget coming to Bathurst?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. In all the horrendous conditions and also in his very specific case, basically being out of contention for the race win within 0.1 of a second of the race starting.
Yeah, yep, that tail shaft that went on the grid. But proof of the Brock aura and magic, anybody else, as Peter McLeod found out 3 years later,
yes.
If that had happened to them, they were towed out of the race.
Mm.
But Brock's car is allowed back in the race.
Mm.
Or reality, should have been out.
Oh, yeah. And speaking of, as we were talking before about the value of television coverage, Brock getting back into that race and the amount of coverage he got from mobile helped kick that deal along into another year, did it not? Or am I thinking of the different year?
I think you're thinking of the story of the BMW year.
Yeah.
But still, the sheer exposure time for sponsors is huge.
Mm.
Huge at Bathurst, even for the smaller cars and teams that got a bit here and there. It's more than they got all year on everything else.
Well, you think back in the day, Motorsport News used to publish the data, Repicom data of exactly how much time each car spent on screen and what that equated to in terms of sponsorship advertising dollars. Yeah,
that was 3 or 4 years worth in the early to mid-90s when it was kicking around. So 92, Larry Perkins wins the Sandow 500.
Yes.
Steve Harrington. The best finish, he versus Paul Morris in the BM. It's a cracker. Have a look at it on YouTube. It's an absolute belter. I love watching that last 3, 4, 5 lap. Will Hagen, Howard Mars, and the commentary is great. It's the classic David v. Goliath thing. So,
and greeted by the double birds of John Davison at the finish line.
Which I still don't know what that was about. We've got photos in the archive. Larry's taking the flag. John's out on the track, and he's giving him a double bird.
And to be fair, it was a tradition in that era of the race for John to stand on the side of the track as the checkered flag's being waved with the winner's trophy. We've seen photos from the 94, 95 races where Dick Johnson and John Bauer won the same thing, but he's not flipping them off in those years.
I'm not sure what's going on in that photo. We'll have to run it one day, but we didn't really have a good gauge for Bathurst off Sandown.
No. It just no GTRs.
Really, just didn't give you a form guide, really. And everybody else, I mean, Glenn Seaton's Falcon was so new, like it was a disaster at Sandown. But it qualified fourth at Bathurst, which was impressive, first time back up there. So you had the Ford fans reinvigorated with their local model, the Falcon, back. First time in 8 years, by the way. When you look at the lineups, it's pretty impressive. But because you still had that overseas flavour in among there. It wasn't just one or two Euros. Like, there were plenty. So you look at the Nissan team, Anders Olofsson, the late Swede, driving with Neil Crompton in the second car. Johnny Cicotto, we mentioned, in the BMWs. Of course, Denny Holm, Kiwi, but kind of part of the furniture in a way at Bathurst for the best part of 10 years at that point.
We had Manuel Reuter, as discussed before, with Peter Brock.
Some people go, who is that Manuel Reuter bloke?
He's a gun touring car driver in Europe.
Well, before that, he won the Le Mans 24 Hour.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a long-time Opel super touring and DTM driver, which, of course, Opel GM team in Europe. So Klaus Niedzwitz.
Yep.
Was back, having not been there for a couple of years.
Yeah, with the Moffat team.
So he was in the Moffat cars.
Yeah, Wyn Percy, of course, back in a Holden Racing team car.
Yeah, and of course, at that stage, he wasn't a local by that stage. No. He'd been there for 2 years, gone away, come back for the endurance races as well. So you had him in the mix as well.
You had the Shell team with John Bowen and Greg Crick.
From overseas?
Yes.
Yeah. I knew you were going to do that. How did I know that you were going to do that and go there? It's nothing surer. Nothing surer. I mean, outside of that, they were the main ones, but the quality of those international drivers, that's top-notch.
Draw. Absolutely.
Top draw. Top draw stuff.
Every lap in under a minute. Every move made to matter. Every decision impacting the outcome of the race. Supercars in Perth. Every second matters. Bosch Power Tools Perth Super Sprint, May 17 to 19. Book now at Ticketek. Supercars, unforgettable.
Local wise, really impressive too. Really impressive as well. And I mean, look at the times. I mean, top 10 shootout. Johnson gets pole in a 12.89 in the Sierra. So he's on pole. Larry does a 14.4 to get on the front row.
Well, you remember that Larry was second provisionally behind only Scaife in the GTR after regular qualifying.
Scaife did a 13.82 in quali. Larry did a 14.08.
Yeah.
But in the shootout, they wound the Sierra up and Dick punched a 12.89. So Larry's 1 point, just over 1.5 seconds off pole, and he's on the front row.
Yeah.
If you're 1.5 seconds off this weekend, you are nowhere near the front row.
You're on A row. It's just not the front row.
Somewhere back there. But what a mix. Sierra pole, Commodore second, GDR third, Falcon fourth, Commodore fifth, BMW ninth. Of course, the shootout, the little thing couldn't get a toe off anyone and Tony Longhurst had to wind the thing up. Remember Alan Grice's lap in that shootout, turn one, straight off, dug that divot out of the front splitter and had to do the whole lap. I don't know why, but that sticks in my brain.
Didn't break the under tray though, because the VP didn't have one at that stage. So he didn't lose much front downforce. If anything, it might have helped.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny, those little things that you remember. And when I think of that race too, I mean, it goes back to being a kid in primary school At the time, in 1992, I lived in Ballarat.
Mm.
So in previous years, what had been Channel 6, I think by then it was Vic TV, became Win TV, it sort of took the best of everything off all the big Melbourne channels and put it on the Ballarat channel.
We had the same thing in North Queensland with NQTV and NQTV.
So for 1992, though, it changed because Prime and Southern Cross came into our world. So Prime was Channel 7, Southern Cross was connected to 10, and Channel 9 was connected to Vic TV. I think it was Vic TV still at that point. It was Win later on. So it was the first chance that we had during the year, and I think it flicked a couple of months before Bathurst. So it felt very strange not to be watching the local channel to watch Bathurst, because there'd been a blue a few years earlier in 88, because the same day as Bathurst, the Seoul Olympics marathon
men's
was
marathon,
on.
Yes.
And, of course, who was Australia's shining light in the marathon that year? Steve Monteghetti. Where's he from? Ballarat. So there was dramas in the news during the week about which thing Channel 6 would show. Are they showing the local bloke running in the marathon trying to win the gold, or the car race? So my tapes of that year's Bathurst 1000 that we recorded at home are full of interspersings of going to the, let's go to the marathon now, they've reached the 12K mark. And we had to cross to Channel 7, which came from Melbourne, but it was all fuzzy and hazy. Oh, man. So by 92.
At least you had that choice. We had to sit through the Graham Cheney boxing bout.
Spike Cheney. He won the bronze.
Yeah, he sure did. Yeah. Silver?
Silver? Bronze? Oh, he won
a medal.
He
was in the gold medal bout and he didn't win.
Okay, silver then. He won a medal. So it's funny the things you remember. And I remember watching it because that year my dad went to the race for the first time.
Ah.
Went on a bus trip with my uncle, my late uncle Darryl. And it was kind of a, we'll scope it out and you and your cousin, Nathan, can come next year. I was like so angry at that. I was like, come on. I mean, I don't know, I'm 12 or 13 or something.
Oh, yeah, but you'd be gutted, like understandable.
And I was
like,
desperate to get, I love that race. I still do. I'd never been. Been to Sandown every year for quite a few years, but to go to Bathurst was a really big deal and I didn't get to do it. So I was.
Where'd they watch the race from, out of curiosity?
Bottom of the mountain. I don't think they went to the top that year.
Did they? Were they at the podium?
Yeah.
Might be jumping ahead here.
No. Ask my dad. Les will tell you. He got called an arsehole by Jim Richards. So
was he responsible for?
No, he wasn't. No, he wasn't. I can't imagine he would have been. Yeah. No. He wasn't one of those blokes. Or
very good.
So,
he was in the Greg Rust category of nice blokes.
Nice blokes.
Innocent of the charge.
Yeah. Just among the crowd. So the things that stick out, like I remember sitting there and we had a thing when you recorded the race on VHS, you had to cut out the ads. You had to press pause. You had to press unpause when it came back from the ad because you had to save tape. You had to make sure you fit the race on one tape or two tapes.
Yeah, that's a valid point. I didn't that year. So I can still remember all the ads for the Porter's Apex Home and Leisure show.
I remember Colin Bond's ads. There were Kel-Tec ads. Remember, he was sponsored by Kel-Tec in the race car.
And he gets passed by the MR2. Yeah, Hang on a minute.
Brr, and this MR2 goes blazing on past. You could win whatever it was.
Probably that MR2.
Probably. He's still got an MR2.
Bond. Yeah, not that one.
No.
He's got Fangio's one.
Yeah. One man more Fangio, the second 12-hour car. Funny the tangents that you go off when you look back at these things of 1992.
Especially that's probably the most memorable thing about Bondi's 92 Bathurst because it was over
Blink
for him.
You missed it.
Yeah, with that brand new Sierra that only did 7 laps of racing.
Yeah, I know. And it never raced again in period.
Yeah.
It's done more in historics by a mile than what it did in period
because
they built a brand new for he and John Smith.
Because I had the Shell sitting there and, well, it's more valuable as a going race car than it is as a Shell.
And the rules were changing at the end of the year. So pretty much everything was going to be scrapped or parked up. GDR's gone.
Yep.
Sierra's gone, although one got rebirthed or two of them got rebirthed as 2-litre cars. Commodores were okay. You were going to be okay with Commodores. Toyota Supra, there was one or two in the mix there, gone. Yep. Corollas could lurk around for a little while. 635's got a stay of execution, or the one, the Gulsons. Yes. The M3 got a stay of execution for 1 year. But apart from that, there was a bunch of stuff that was getting its last crack at that race.
That's true. So the race-winning GTR never raced again in Australia?
No, because there was only one Group A race in Australia after that, and that was Adelaide.
Mm.
And the number two car that had been the Crompton-Olofsson car was the number one Richards car for Adelaide, and Marcus Gaff didn't race.
Mm.
Because that very same weekend in Fuji, one of the former team cars was racing there, and Gibson crew would go over there to run it. So they were split for the weekend, and the reality was, well, they had a crashed car from Bathurst.
Yeah.
And they didn't probably have the manpower, and probably it's the last one, so what's...
Yeah, and Scafie had his Formula Brabham race to be concerned about anyway.
Yeah, so it sort of... But that's, yeah, that's the way it played out. The car that crashed at Bathurst in 92 won the race after it was red flagged, never raced again. It was repaired, and it's been part of multiple... You know, I think it was part of that Terry Ashwood collection of cars that he purchased off Fred later on down the track. So to me, it's the pick of the GDRs. If you are going to have one of the four that remain out of the five, that's the car. And it's primarily not just because it's a Bathurst winner, but because the gym stuff is, here we are 30 years on, it is still quoted, remembered,
replayed.
And this weekend I'm sure it's going to get a run or three.
It's on shirts.
It's on shirts. Jim Richards says I'm an arsehole because all that stuff. Yeah. It lives in the history books of this race, and it's ongoing long after us, long after Jim. It's one of those pieces that people who aren't into motorsport, they still wheel it out on the back page on Fox Sports or in other places that don't really delve into racing that often. People remember it, and it's always going to be there. So for me, the 92 winning GDR is the greatest GDR of all time.
That's fair. I got to say, like, as part of the process of writing the book with Jim Richards, which is available for pre-order in our shop at the moment, I was curious as to how he'd, after all this time, view what happened on the podium that day. And he says it was a spur of the moment thing. It wasn't something that he went up there planning to say. And I went back and watched the video afterwards, and you can see when he first comes out onto the podium, he and Scafie are all smiles, and then it cuts to the crowd for maybe 5 seconds or so, and then cuts back to the podium, and Jim just has a face of stone. Like, it's,
is that because a can whizzed past their head while you didn't see that bit of the podium? Yes. Because I remember Scafie saying that the cans were flying, but on the TV you don't really see that.
And you could see as Gary Wilkinson sort of introduced Jim to the microphone that Jim quite clearly had not paid attention or heard a single thing that Gary had said, and just went off on his own tangent and delivered for something that was spur of the moment. For someone that Jim is not really that sort of natured guy, to just deliver something, it's the perfect speech for that situation. Like, you could come up with a whole bunch of different things, and he just laid it all out concisely, dispassionately, and put a lovely full stop on it.
And to think that he was the one calming Scafe down before they went out. You know, remember and it's funny that Gibson's recently had a reunion with a bunch of their staff and old drivers and cars here in Melbourne, which I was lucky enough to go along to an MC. And they had one of the Tui's Top Gun jackets there. I think it was Richo's. I think
I was going to say, you'd know if it was Scafie's, it'd be a bit stretched in the pockets.
Exactly. They were at the back of that podium, the old podium at Bathurst, which is the new podium now. And, of course, Tui's were the race sponsor. And, of course, Tui's had been the sponsor of the Australian Drivers' Championship, and they were sort of doing other stuff in the sport.
Scafie had
a deal there. I think there's that famous promo photo of him in a Tui's singlet doing a shoulder press, looking like he's pumping up for Bathurst. And the story is that, you know, Mark, who, let's face it, Mark can fire up. Has that ability, Scafie.
You don't say.
Yeah, oh, no, it's amazing.
Shocking.
But he was loading, like, they had Tui's product out the back before they went out on the podium, all here, there, and everywhere. And Scafie's loading the jacket, the Tui's Top Gun, the nice leather jacket, with cans ready to fire back at these dudes under the podium. And Richo's the one giving him the, it's all right, mate, calm it down. We'll go out there. We'll get our trophy. We'll say hello. We'll get off. We'll be back here having a beer. It'll be great. It'll be fine. And he's the one that lights it up. Brilliant.
And while all that's going on, at the bottom of the podium is the managing director of Nissan, Leon Daphne, and Leon's wife, who is whacking people with an umbrella, telling people off for carrying on like they were, and justifiably so.
Oh, it's epic. And there's all these angles to that whole thing. And remember, too, that, of course, the order at Bathurst for the podium is 3-2-1. So... yes. Out, or were there class winners?
There were class winners, and I can't remember offhand if they came out first.
I know. I remember it now. Yeah. So they didn't for the V8 era cars, the four cars that are in that category, they didn't have the class winner,
which is a shame, on the podium. Because I reckon, you know, Gricey would have calmed everyone.
No, Gricey would have rolled them up harder. Because remember in 91, when he and Percy go out finishing second, in the people's mind, the winner because the Nissan's evil. Mm. And has Gricey got his Akubra on, his Foster shirt hanging out, and he's ooh, 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 ooh.
Yeah.
Like, he's rolling them. Imagine if they let that class, because Percy and Gricey finished fifth and won the class for the new cars, but they didn't have a podium presentation for that class just as well, because Grice would have sensed the people and riled them up. You reckon Dick and JB riled them up? I reckon Gricey would have had them going harder before all that.
Well, no, you make a very good point, but I don't think that crowd needed Dick to rile them up.
I think they were good. I think they were good for riling.
Yeah, they definitely gave the third-placed finishers plenty.
Well, the blokes who escaped, well, one guy escaped pretty much unscathed out of that podium.
Scott Barguana.
Correct. Because Jason, so he and Jason won the class, the little car class, in the Corolla, but it was crashed in the Jim Richards crash at the elbow.
Mm.
And Jason went to the podium.
Yeah.
Scotty's still up at the crash or somewhere on his way back.
Jim and a few other people had gotten the rides
first. Yeah, when you're the outright winner, you get a ride in the medical car. I must ask Scotty one day of where he was when that was all going down.
Because he wouldn't have known that he'd won the class either, would he?
I think there's probably confusion. I mean, even Jim himself, by the time he came back to the pits from the crash site, he thought he'd stuffed it.
Yeah.
And they told him, you've won the race.
Yeah, he was told live by Mark Osler on TV.
You've won the race.
Yeah.
Well, actually, you know what? Should we play the audio here?
Well, Ivan Stibbard has just awarded the race to the number one car. You must be pleased with that, even after the crash.
Fantastic. I can't believe it.
Well done, Jimmy Richards.
So he's taking a drink out of the drink straw and nearly chokes on the drink.
That's just amazing. And then all the crew members come over and, like, just,
I think,
stunned.
If you look close enough in the vision, you can see a very young Steve Richards.
Yes.
He was there that weekend as well. It's the red hair's up and about. There's a bit of a perm going on in Richo's world.
It's quite the hair.
Yeah.
It is a shame that there wasn't a corresponding camera in the Dick Johnson racing pits when all this occurred.
That would have been interesting.
That's quite a contrast for historical sake.
Yeah. So the podium, covering that off. So Bugs goes out there. This is before the How Good's This era. You know, everyone's like, oh, yeah, the young bloke, he's won the podium. Yeah. Oh, yeah, great.
He was stoked. He was stoked to be there.
Totally.
Especially since they'd also crashed out of the race.
Yeah, yeah. So they bring out Anders and Neil because they're third.
Mm.
And, of course, if that race goes on, they probably win.
Mm.
They probably win.
Anders, who is the second most happy person in the entire podium procedures behind Bargs.
Yeah, and I think I don't care, whatever cars they want to, it's okay.
I think he appreciated it.
I think he was
appreciated,
like, oh,
in the sense that, like, he could understand and he got it and he wasn't overly upset
because it's a Swedish thing. They're just unflappable.
Yeah.
Everyone's just going bananas underneath the podium at Bathurst and he's like, oh, yeah, it's okay, you know, I can't do a very good Swedish accent, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Yet Uncle Neil flips the double finger bird at the end of it, gives it a bit of up yours on the way off. So he doesn't – it's a very smart call. If you're going to flip that, do it as you're walking off, because if you do it as you come out or halfway through, you're pretty vulnerable there. You're in front of the crowd there. You're in the hitting zone for a flying can or two. Mm. But he was doing it as he went off. Yes. So, and then, of course, they're all keen to see Dick and JB, Dick the moral winner.
In the crowd's eyes, the moral
winner.
He
was the winner in the crowd's eyes that day. So I don't think he really riled the crowd that hard when you stop and think about it.
It was reinforcement.
But the line about, I don't know how you can get beaten by a crashed car, spurred the others. Like, it wasn't like he actively said, hey, all you mob down there, get upset, get angry, give that crap. But they didn't need, as you said, they didn't need the encouragement. It's the most – when you think about podiums at Bathurst, it's the most memorable one by a country mile. There's a few other cool moments over the years of, you know, Reynolds and Luke Yulden piggybacking. That was pretty funny. But there's not really many others where crazy stuff, weird stuff happens. Winners come out, wave to the crowd.
87, the third place getter getting the bigger cheer than either first or second
and
place.
Those chicks screaming underneath the podium.
86, when Dick turned up to claim third place.
Oh, that's right.
There's that one as well.
His lap score said he was
third. I wouldn't argue with Jill Johnson's lap chart.
No,
but
she's a guru at lap scoring.
But the ARDC disagreed.
But over the years, the podium wasn't a place for controversy.
No.
Like, it was celebration, speeches, champagne, trophies, applause.
Happy people, some not as happy people. Everyone goes home.
Yeah, but 92, that lives forever in the history books of this race. And obviously, you know, we live in a world now where, oh, you shouldn't boo anyone, and a lot of that type of stuff's going around. But at the end of the day, a different time, different era. And like, it was end of an era too. Like those, but I think that the funny thing is that here we are 30 years on, you ask a lot of people, oh, wow, and I've said this before, the GDR, Godzilla, oh, what an amazing car. Oh, that was unbelievable. Oh, wow. At the time, hated it.
Yeah.
Isn't it funny how time changes all of that?
Because 24 months of utter domination and the popular local products not getting a look in, and that was the end result.
Sierra wasn't a local product.
I just meant the Commodores, but I don't think the Sierras were that favoured either.
Yeah, but again, no, that's true. But it was Dick. Yeah. It was DJ. Exactly, yeah. So the famous 17 was one of those things.
Do you know how to find the right oil for your car? Now you can find out quickly and easily online, thanks to Castrol's Rego to Oil tool. Simply type in your Rego, select your state, and within seconds you'll know the best Castrol products to unlock the edge of performance in your car. So what's your car best suited to? Just search Rego, the number 2, and oil, and find out.
I love the fact too that, and I think about the broadcast because that's how I consumed that race, and a lot of our listeners will have, Doug Mulray, he's in the mix.
I loved Mulray's commentary. Again, I was probably the right age, but I will say that
probably most of the gags went over our head though at that age.
Oh, totally, yeah. To be fair, one of the His speculation during the Denny Holm safety car probably doesn't age well.
No.
But Mulray, when he was being himself, was just a very verbose, entertaining commentator. And, yeah, there's probably room for that in the broadcast somewhere today, to be fair.
Got any
I don't know how it would fit.
Got any nominations for this weekend to add to the lineup at the last minute?
I'm on the spot here. No one's coming to mind.
Okay.
When you look at the blend, like Mulray wasn't just some radio punter that was
brought
in.
He was a racing guy.
He loved racing. It. Like he could talk racing with the best of them and had a fair knowledge and understanding of the sport. Mm. And that's what helped. He could blend that with his natural persona.
I'm pretty sure, and I haven't watched the tape in recent times, we've got the full race, the 92 DVD. It was part of all of those old Bathursts that you can buy from our online store, superstore.vhsleuth.com.au. Full race, go to O, including all the vision from the ad breaks. So you think you've seen it all on the day with your tape that you've got from back in the day. You haven't. There's more stuff, a lot of in-car, all sorts of stuff.
Don't even have to pause it.
Yeah, which is really
cool. Pause it at your leisure,
well,
not for a purpose.
Swap discs at some point, yes, part two, but... The other big thing about 92 was Wayne Gardner.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't even considered that.
Yeah. So that's his first Bathurst 1000. He'd retired from motorcycle racing during that year. He was riding for the factory Honda team still. Had played with a little bit of touring car stuff. Armin Hahn was a friend of his.
Mm.
And so a deal gets put together with Graham Moore, who did some pretty good deals at Bathurst over the years, Williams Renault 5 years after that. Strathfield Car Radios, VN Commodore, which had been the GIO Commodore, Bob Forbes' car previously. So he was a massive draw card. That was another massive storyline coming into the 92 race that this, you know, the world champion of 5 years earlier, two-time Australian Grand Prix winner, the guy who put motorcycling on the map in the national conscience in this country, was going to race a car at Bathurst in a Commodore. Like, that got plenty of attention. That was a big deal.
And a smart move as well, going to Bathurst for your first attempt in a car that no one is expecting to win or place, or if you're in the top 10 at the end of the day, you've done well. Lowered expectations. Could actually go there and sort of like hone the craft, as it were.
And I think they had a pile of problems and ended up finishing P-nowhere pretty much in the grand scheme of things. But the attention, I think they're 26th. I just looked up the results. They they finished one spot in front of Brock, actually, who had a bit of a delayed day that race. Yeah, it's a big deal. And, of course, you know, he was in Top Gear the years that followed. HRT, his own team, and Seaton's team, and stuff like that over the journey. But it's a big deal. Like, I'm trying to think of the equivalent. It's kind of
it would have been like Casey Stoner coming to Bathurst and co-driving with LDM in 2012.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, that's the sort of scenario. And the attention it put on the race, the storylines it put around the race, and don't forget too, very different time 30 years ago. How did you learn about the race, what was going to happen? You basically got a little bit in the newspapers here and there. Your Auto Action magazine, Motorsport News didn't exist. It didn't come until the next year.
Racing Car News was gone.
Racing Car News had, shut up shop that year, was reborn as Motor Racing Australia the following year. So how you got your stuff, of course you had the touring car rounds during the year, late nights in a lot of cases.
Bit on Sports World on a Sunday morning.
Yep, Channel 7 kept the link going there a bit. But the reality is compared to now, you know, you look at the landscape of what's around for your Bathurst lead up. I mean, just take our place as an instance.
Yeah.
We've had podcasts going year round where we're talking about Bathurst. We're talking about the history. We're talking about what's ahead. Our website's constantly got something on it in the lead up, you know, not just this week, but previous weeks leading up to it. Because of digital media now, this and Supercars website and other outlets, there's so much stuff out there in the ether before you turn on the telecast for the first time on Thursday, which, man, that was unheard of in those days.
Yeah.
I mean, Friday qualifying coverage didn't happen back in the day. It was the shootout on Saturday for, I think it was an hour maybe that year. Maybe
they were starting to drift.
Maybe 2 hours by that point too. Because you just raced something good, Sports and Ants.
Yes.
Were there that year, which that Keith Carling Nissan was a bloody rocket. That was cool to watch. But you didn't really get to see. You got a snippet on the news on the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday night, the 11 a.m. show on Channel 7, because it was always in school holidays. So I'd be home just trying to see something on the telly because I wanted a bit of Bathurstness. Of course, the race program would be in the newsagent the month leading up. So my dad would buy that as soon as it came out and I'd pore over it for the month or two, 6 weeks, 5 weeks, whatever it was leading up. Apart from that though,
donuts.
You were pretty depleted of all this stuff that you've got these days. I think sometimes we forget how good we've got it. Oh,
that's a valid point. It's the landscape of the lead up to a Bathurst 1000 looks very different now. It's
it's better. It's better.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of stuff that goes on with socials and online that's, you know, is that really news or is that really stuff I need to consume? But there's enough good stuff around there. I mean,
it's nice to have the choice.
Yeah, even just knowing
at the end of the day,
well, what time is everything on?
Yeah,
bang, you can find it within 2 seconds flat. It was an amazing. I mean, it wasn't really a corking close fight race.
No, not in any way, shape, or form. Once there was one significant pass for the lead, and it occurred at the end of lap two, and then after that, Scaife took off. And then it started raining towards the end of the stint and four-wheel drive works better than two-wheel drive in those conditions. And the Nissan, there was really no chance of that Nissan being headed for the rest of the day outside of something weird occurring. And lo and behold, something weird occurred, but they stopped the race. So they won anyway.
Yeah, and it's one of those cases where that race, there's no such thing as a barn-burning race all day. Races that really stick in your mind are because of the moments.
So it's
Jim on the podium, it's Denny Hulme pulled over, it's Brock stopped on the grid. You can pretty much pick five or six moments of every great race.
It's Brock getting fired up after getting turned by Gricey at Forest Elbow.
Oh, that's right too. Probably the most reserved fired up you've seen Brock on TV because he always knew when a camera was on and he was perfect Pete, shiny Pete.
Well, but drive with some grey matter.
Yeah, that's right. And there was him going off at Wally Story.
Yeah.
The other thing too, just talking TV quickly before we wrap this up, I've loved – the great thing about this pod today, we didn't plan a thing.
Blank sheet of paper.
Because we went, you know what, let's just spurt out everything we remember and love about the 92 race. And I think it's worked pretty well because I've thought of things that I haven't thought about for a very long time. Underrated part of the television in that era, Richard Hay from the UK.
Yeah, agreed.
I reckon he was just about the best international commentator – that's come out to Australia to do that race.
It'd be a short list, but
his dad was another one. Neville Hay was another of those guys. I just thought he added so much. He was so pro. He's still around the UK. His son runs the production business that he had previously run now. He raced at Le Mans when I was over there in 02 in a little Morgan.
Yeah.
A little yellow BMW engine. It was built of wood.
Mm.
Legit.
Yeah.
It actually was.
Traditional Morgan build.
Yeah, that's right. I just thought he was great. And particularly when you look back on it, he added info, he had awareness, he had proximity, all the things that you need. And he had, you know, could. It's funny though, every year he would do, they penciled him in for the story in the telecast running through the international drivers.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it was, you could set your watch to it that Richard Hay would be doing that story. So, I thought that was pretty cool.
That's cool. A good call.
But it's really all about the Nissan. It's about Jim. It's about that magic moment. I can't believe it. We've not played the audio of the podium.
No, we haven't, have we? Have
to. Before we go, I'm sure that there's some of our listeners today who are driving to Bathurst. They're out and about driving to and from jobs or whatever you're doing. Settle back, relax, and enjoy the day that Jim gave the crowd a character reference.
I'm just really stunned for words. I can't believe the reception. I thought Australian race fans had a lot more to go than this. This is bloody disgraceful. I'll keep racing, but I'll tell you what, this is going to remain with me for a long time. You're a pack of arseholes.
Well, it has remained with him for a long time because we're still talking about it, Wildale. It's in his book. It's here on this podcast. It is, without doubt, the moment of the 1992 Bathurst 1000. It sits in the top five of all-time Bathurst moments for me. Jim Richards' podium speech is stellar.
There can't be many people that have not heard that over the years. Not just fans of motorsport, but beyond that as well.
I think you're right.
So extensively. It's one of those, it's almost, as we touched on earlier, it's one of those moments that's largely transcended the sport it occurred in.
It's the moment that transcends Jim Richards.
Yeah.
In terms of beyond the motor racing sphere into the mainstream.
Which is ironic because it's so untypical of the man himself.
Yeah. And, you know, of all the achievements, seven times a winner in that race, champion of a billion things. I mean, seriously, how we fit his career in 400 pages. Kudos to you, mate. I think you made that happen because when we started it, I thought this is 9 million pages. I don't know how we're going to jam all this in.
It could have been. It genuinely could have been.
It really could have been.
Could have done it in multiple volumes.
Yeah, and he opens up about the 92 stuff. So there's plenty of stuff around that race in the book. So I think people will really enjoy that from the horse's mouth as it was as opposed to us retelling it or telling you our view on it all. So have a little look at the snapshot here of how that race finished. So that race was, well, it actually went a few more laps than the results indicate because they had to backdate it a couple to be able to get cars in the results that kind of really should have been.
Mm.
So Scaife and Richards win. Johnson Bowes second.
A minute behind.
Crompton and Olofsson third, having been the guinea pig earlier on for the pit stop.
They weren't the guinea pig.
Well, sorry, you're right.
Neil saw the weather coming and thought, I don't want to be out here on wets, and dived in to be greeted by a fully set up Gibson crew who were expecting car one.
Yes, that's right. Sorry, my apologies. You're right. So he actually, of all the bad luck he ever had in that race, that was the best move he could have made. Jim's had to go around again on slicks, crashes the car, out of the race. But then, of course, the worst thing happens for Neil. The race is called, car one's declared the winner. Typical of Neil's luck at Bathurst in his driving career.
So we have Neil to thank for creating one of the most memorable moments in Bathurst history, directly or indirectly.
I hadn't thought about it like that, but now that you say it.
He set in motion the chain of events that occurred that led to car one crashing, led to Jim thinking he lost the race, cursing Crompton losing the race.
You're so harsh. So harsh. But I love the way you think. Yeah. I love the way you think. So that was the podium. Fourth was Longhurst and Giacotto in the BMW that had been crashed in the morning warm-up by Johnny at Forest Elbow. Fifth, Percy and Grice. Mark Gibson, Rowan Onslow and the GIO GTR was sixth.
Should crashed into a couple of cars over the course of the day and early on had copped oil on the windscreen.
Yeah.
We think about Sandown 93 and the HRT throwing the bucket of water. They were doing that for the Gibbs car as well.
Yeah, they're just throwing it over the pit wall, but at least he was slowing down.
Yes.
Didn't accelerate towards it. Worked out okay. Eighth was the Wayne Park, David Skippy Parsons, PJ Sierra with the whole front missing off it. I can't remember why it was damaged, but it was
a multi-car tangle, I think, at the top of Mountain Straight involving John Bao, the Hong Kong Sierra, the ex-Rouse car that the number 36 car.
The Rod Jones car.
Jones car. And, the 35 PJ car copped the worst of it. I don't know who was at the wheel, whether it was Skippy or Wayne, but they'd have quite the story to tell.
Yeah, it was slightly modified. Perkins and Harrington ninth, they had some dramas in the Bob Jane Teammates car, which, by the way, just looked fantastic. It's great that car is back in that livery.
And briefly had a Ford badge on it during the weekend.
It did. Is that story in the Perkins book?
I think it's mentioned. It's mentioned.
There's a bit of dodginess.
No photo, but it's mentioned.
It happened. Yeah. It happened. And rounding out the 10 was actually the Daily Planet car, Andrew Harris, Gary Cook, and John Trimble. And remember, too, John Trimble had jumped cars because he was in the other car in the lead up to the race, but it caught on fire at the bottom of Conrod and he literally bailed out of it while it was still moving because it was engulfed in flames.
And so they burnt that car to the ground. And then this particular car, the one that finished 10th, did so having been written off in that crash on Conrod Straight.
Yeah.
So it was a very expensive weekend for John Trimble.
It was not a good day out. I mean, they did finish 10th in the race.
They had to fight to get that as well.
And they were one of the cars, I think, that the race got backdated another lap to kind of bring them into the result.
Because they did point out that, well, you red flagged the race because of the series of accidents that happened. Ours was the first.
Mm.
Come on.
Yeah, we're in the accident.
Yeah.
Even though that accident took a little while to fully have everyone join in. But
yes.
There you go. That's the top 10. That's the 1992 TUI's 1000. I've loved this. This has been great fun to sit down and talk about a race that is remembered for many reasons by so many, but pretty much one reason in the grand scheme of things. It's a massive week at Mount Panorama. Come and say good day to us if you see us at the track over the course of the rest of the week. We've got Repco Bathurst Daily every day from Wednesday through to Sunday with all of the updates on the latest and greatest of what's going on at the track over the course of race week, so you can tune in there. You'll get your notifications via your podcast apps, but if you miss it, keep your eyes peeled for it via all the places that you listen here to the podcast. It'll be via the website player that we have on v8sleuth.com.au. Massive coverage this week. Connor O'Brien, Stefan Bartholomaeus, Will, myself, Shane Rogers. We're pumping stats for the telecast. The website is going to be humming. There is so much to do. Tune into the pods every day. We'll see you at the mountain. Safe driving. If you're driving today up to Mount Panorama, down to Mount Panorama, across to Mount Panorama. Have I got them all?
Over
to Mount Panorama. Yeah, you've got to go through hills to get there. Yeah. Oh, that counts. Another quick one too. The Repco Trackside store in Harris Park in the merchandise area. It's going to be a cool car on display there. The Johnson Bao 96-97 Falcon EL, which was the runner-up as an EF in 96. It's in its EL spec now, so you can come and check that car out. I'm going to be in at the Repco Trackside store over the course of the weekend. A few different drivers and guests making appearances, and we will have the V8 Sleuth book range there. And the fine folk at Repco have slashed some of the prices. You're going to get some really good deals. It's part of their support of supercar fans. Whether we can all be back at Bathurst this year for the first time in 3 years. We're even letting the Kiwis come back. So everyone is welcome. Everyone's in. If you're coming to see us Thursday night at the National Motor Racing Museum, you have to have a ticket for the Greg Murphy Open Night. It is a sellout. There's no more tickets, no more seats. If you don't have a ticket, I'm really sorry. We can't fit more people in. Please don't ask us for tickets. We haven't got any. We're looking forward to that. That's going to be an absolute belter. Quickly, Will, what are you looking forward to most about this week?
I'm just looking forward to another Bathurst. It's always great to be there. Missing 2020. We're still catching up. It makes me appreciate the opportunity to go there every year and what it means.
Let's see, too, if anyone really gets inspired to celebrate that 30th anniversary of the 1992 race, gets up on that podium, and even if no one's booing them, launches something really interesting. I issue a challenge to every supercar driver this week: make the podium memorable. Shoeys don't count. Piggybacks have been done. Come up with something that will make you live in infamy forever. So as when they mention Jim Richards and you're a pack of arseholes, that they can also go, yeah, and remember then in 2020 when such and such did such and such. Give us something this year. Can't wait to see it. We're done. Repco Bathurst Daily tomorrow. Join us then.
Every lap in under a minute. Every move made to matter. Every decision impacting the outcome of the race. Supercars in Perth. Every second matters. Bosch Power Tools Perth Super Sprint, May 17 to 19. Book now at Ticketek. Supercars. Unforgettable.